July 11th to order. And if you look around the room, you'll note that we do not yet have quorum, but we are expecting quorum today. But we have quite a few folks who have scheduled family vacations. So we will go into our business that doesn't take a vote, for starters.
13.
And I think presently I count 11.
12.
Or 12. Oh, I may not have counted myself. So, okay. So we're getting there. So I'll welcome you, but we won't take the issue of elections up at this point because we can't vote because we don't have a quorum. And we can't do the approval. Okay. Thank you. Can't really do the approval of the minutes either for the same reason. And I would take public comment on items not on this agenda if I had any public comment cards, but I don't have any, and I don't see anybody wildly waving their hand from the audience. So we will. Well, now they're waving, but they're not going to speak. So let us go then to item 5, which would be our subcommittee Equity and Access Committee report. Naomi, she may need help. You know what, if everybody just checks their button on the side, your button on the side should be in the up position, and then you should be able to do the mic button on front. Yeah, the on-off power switch hasn't been turned on.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Okay, thank you. Little technical issues there. So the equity and access committee did not meet today. We postponed our meeting again due to the topics that we wanted to address not being ready for consumption yet. But the equity working group did meet with a number of the members of the equity access committee there, and we had two primary items. We looked at some Plan Bay Area implementation policies, and we had a breakout session to look at a few specific goals that have really risen to the top in our discussions. And we got the opportunity to brainstorm some creative solutions or policy ideas to address those issues. So the first, we actually did three groups, and so some of these categories got condensed a little bit, but I'm just going to read them as they are on here. Developing more affordable housing and transportation choices to reduce housing and transportation costs. Promoting an equitable pattern of growth that reduces the risk of displacement. Improve access to jobs and community services, and we ask people to emphasize that that also includes schools. Building more healthy communities, and reduce non-commute time to promote more equitable mobility. We also were asked to have sort of a general economic development look at all of these topics as well as we went through. The second item that we did after the breakout sessions was we looked at the Plan Bay Area Environmental Impact Report, some of the alternatives that are going to be considered, and we did special emphasis on Alternative 5, which the name is actually a little bit controversial. But it involves equity and was worked on by several community groups. But all of the alternatives were quite interesting. We also wanted to let you know that one of our members of the group brought information, and Pam put copies of this over on the table, on a workshop on planning healthy and just communities for all in the age of global warming. And it's at the East Bay Community Foundation, and that's tomorrow evening from 6 to 8. And so that information is over there on the table for you. Would anybody else who was at that meeting like to add anything that I missed? Oh, we got very nice handouts, very colorful, about the five alternatives. So feel free to ask any of us if you'd like to peek at ours. Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you, Naomi. We now have quorum, so let us please go back to item number 2, which is a first action item on our agenda. And so I'd first like to open the floor for any further nominations for chair. Okay.
Move nominations be closed.
It's been moved and seconded that nominations be closed.
And Dolly's going to turn calling the
question.
The question on the vote over to me since we are voting her as chair. So all those in favor of Dolly Sandoval as chair, could you please raise your hand? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. That's unanimous.
Thank you. Thank you. I will, you know, chairing this organization is definitely an evolving process for me, and at the end of the next vote, then I want to make a couple of comments. And so we have two nominations for vice chair. One is Aegon Turplin, who's been serving for the last year, and Aegon has a previously scheduled vacation at this point. And then the other one is Linda Jeffrey Sailors, who was nominated from the floor. Are there any other nominations for vice chair at this point?
Move nominations be closed.
It's been moved and
seconded.
So we're closed nominations. And so do you want me to do this? Okay. So let's do this again by a hand vote. All those in favor of Aegon being the vice chair for the next year, please raise your hand. Eight, I think. All those in favor of Linda being the vice chair for the next year?
Six.
I do. And so the vote is 8 for Aegon and 6 for Linda, and so Aegon will serve as your vice chair for the next year. Okay, thank you. Something that Pam and I have both noticed over the last year is that we've been pretty busy on our schedule here. We've had a lot of items that have to do with both long-term and then shorter-term projects. And one of the items that I try to recognize at some point on the agenda, although I don't see Chair's remarks today, and so I'm just going to make them now, because I think it's an important item, is an issue that Federico brought up to me. Two different emails that he brought up. And so let me lead with the second one. He raised the issue as to whether MTC should help offset the youth ride for free issue regarding Muni and San Francisco ridership to the cost, I think, of MTC of $5 million a year. And the commission had taken that item up a couple of different times, and three times, the last time this morning, and all three times they've decided to not make a decision on this. And in fact, after the first time we saw it on the agenda, Aegon, Pam and I sat down and talked and Aegon suggested that we bring this to our agenda so that we could discuss it, because we thought it as a policy item. Should the commission do that just in San Francisco, or should they consider that at all? At that time, the issue was going to the commission again, back more sooner than we could meet. We didn't know at the second time of that meeting that they again decided to not make a decision. So in retrospect, we could have had that on our agenda, forfeiting some other item, but given input to that. Last, we also didn't realize that at the second meeting that they had postponed that item again. And now they've postponed it again. And so we do timing-wise, have an ability to discuss this item not today on our agenda because it's not agendized, but if this committee felt like they could get 13 people for a quorum to be able to make any decisions next week, then we could have a special meeting to discuss just this item. And so that's something to ponder at the moment. But it brings up a bigger issue, well, two bigger issues. One, Aegon, Pam, and I over the last year have really tried to look at the commissioner's agenda and figure out what are the big ticket items that we really need to explore and give policy advice on. And I think we've done that to a large degree fairly well. But there are certainly some items, such as this youth ridership issue, that kind of slips under the radar that we don't catch for whatever reason. Or when we look at the agenda, we have to decide, is that a bigger item than giving input on the five scenarios, for example? And so we are, as a staff and committee chair, trying to look at this and balance what our agendas are, how heavy they are, and how many items we think we can reasonably manage in our 2 to a little over 2.5 hour time frame. So that's a long way of saying we apologize for not being more diligent, I suppose, on seeing if we couldn't get this item on our agenda, for starters. Secondly, though, all these agenda items are always posted on the web at least a week in advance. And so if you see something on the agenda for another committee or the commission itself that you think should have been brought to us, shoot Pam, myself, Aegon, an email. And if you get all three of us, one of us will ping the others right away so that we can bring that up so we don't miss important opportunities. This issue just kind of slipped through our fingers, and then we thought it was done, and then it wasn't done, and then we thought it was done, and still not done, so that's kind of where we are at the moment. But we are trying our darndest to stay on top of items like that. Rich?
Marshall and I attended the meeting this morning in San Francisco, and something, and since it's not an agenda item, I'm making a report on the meeting, but it'll bring out some information. They had three different scenarios. The third one was for $8 million, which would do three counties. And it came out that whatever the money is, $8 million, $5 million, $4 million, that comes out of Lifeline money. There's a total of $12 million. So I think that may be one reason nobody took action this morning. However, I think if we don't take it up, this should definitely be taken up by the Equity and Access Committee.
Marshall? And then Dolores?
I'd just like to add to what Rich said. The decision today was to postpone further action on this that particular issue until the next commission meeting, to the full commission. But we'll see what happens in that.
Thank you, and I believe that next committee commission meeting is in 2 weeks. Dolores?
In speaking against bus passes for kids, I feel like I'm speaking against motherhood, but I think that it's a very good thing to discuss. However, I do not think we should discuss it in a vacuum. I don't think it should be an emotional kind of thing. I think that all of the things should be brought to the table, such as the thing, are they taking it out of Lifeline? And if they take it out of Lifeline, how does that affect in other ways? Okay, the other thing is that I think we need to look to see the last time that they did it, and I don't know if it's the last time, okay, the last time I know that it was done, in Oakland, it was a disaster in a lot of ways. And it was a disaster in the fact that they were passing these passes around to all their friends and brothers and sisters, and so the agency was losing money. The kids were leaving school and, you know, going other places other than to school on the bus. There wasn't a curfew on it. I mean, they were riding it 24/7. So I think that if we talk about it, we need to talk about it in a way where who would administer it, and what should the regulations be as to who gets it, and what hours can they use it. And I don't think the agency should do it, and I don't think an overburdened school district should do it. So anyway, I just want to bring up something that we discuss it other than emotionally.
Great, thank you. And I want to make sure we're not speaking to the item right now, but bringing up what if we should speak to the item. Carlos, and then Randy, and then Federico.
So my question is, if we want to have this meeting next week, is there already a staff report or something that kind of talks to Dolores' point, that kind of gives a pros and cons and has, something that's already been formed? Because I don't want it to become a emotional thing and or based on anecdotes, because we all have probably our opinions on this.
It appears that there is, by the nods in the audience from staff.
I'm just wondering about our Brown Act requirements, number one, for any meeting that we have, so that we have to take that into consideration. But I'm also wondering, because commute time for some of us exceeds the amount of time that we're actually here, is there an option for us to dial in and actually attend the meeting via phone conference? Because I think that would make a difference in reaching a quorum.
Great question. Is that capability? That capability is available. Federico?
I'd like to speak to Jim.
Excuse me. I would like to speak to two items. One is the policy-related issue, taking a step back as to agendizing of items, and second is to the issue of free youth passes, specifically that's being suggested for a special meeting. With regards to the first, my comments to the chair and to Pam were raised in the context of how do we get ahead of the game, realizing that in this instance we were not. But how do we avoid repetition of this problem of issues being presented that we hear about in the press or otherwise, but not having had a chance to provide input and hopefully forward that input to the appropriate MTC board and committees. I'm happy to hear that the chair and vice chair are meeting to discuss and look forward to the looking at the MTC agenda as a whole and seeing where we might pick up items for input. I don't know whether it's possible or not, but one suggestion might be simply at the conclusion or the beginning at some point during a regular meeting to ask the PAC members if there are any suggestions that they would like to make for future meetings, agenda items for future meetings, so that we can pick up on certain items that we may otherwise be missing. With specific regards to the Free Youth Pass program, I, too, have my own views on it, but I don't think now is the appropriate time to get into that. Nor am I particular, even though I'm anxious to express those views, nor do I think it's time to, that it may be, that it's appropriate even to have a special meeting. I mean, if we miss it, we miss it in terms of commenting this cycle. I am concerned about issues of the Brown Act. I am concerned about appropriate notice to the public and so forth and so on. But I think the holding a special meeting main in and of itself is not, I don't know if it's that crucial or critical in this particular instance and whether we set a bad precedent for that or not, whether we want to go down that road. I think that we can make comments. I suspect the issue, although being carried over by the MTC for the next session, that there will be time again in the future. The issue is not going away, is my basic point. So I think we can agendize it for a regular PAC meeting and give staff appropriate time to prepare for a presentation rather than ask them to drop everything and put something together in the next few days for next week. I'm not sure that's quite fair to staff who are involved in, or what their plans are. Maybe they have vacations too, and I hate to interfere with their summertime vacations with their families. So I think we ought to leave it flexible. I would simply like to request the chair to look into the matter and see how we can fit it in best into a future PAC agenda.
Thank you, Federico. Rich?
this might help solve it. I don't believe the commission's meeting next month. Are they going to vote on it this month? Yeah. Okay, well, then a backup that would give us enough time, and for selfish reasons, because I'm in another board meeting all first part of next week. But also, I think it may be a good idea to have it the Tuesday before the board meeting. That'll give us plenty of time to notice it and get information out to the public if we do it. And I'm certainly not against it because of the effect on equity.
Okay, so I feel very strongly, I think, along the same lines as Federico, that I'm not sure this is the issue to kind of hang our hat on and see if we can pull it together to have a special meeting next week. I, for one, am going to be out of total communication. I don't know Aegon's schedule. I don't know how long this family vacation he's on right now lasts. And I'm slightly curious if you would raise your hand just to give us a hands up as to whether you would, like you would commit now to a meeting sometime next week, because I think I know that's very open-ended, but until we start whittling away. So it looks like two. So let me suggest maybe and repeat Federico's suggestion, which is as commissioners or as PAC members, why don't you contact your commissioners and tell them what you think the impact would be and your feelings on that, and not have an official meeting. And that way they hear from you and can will take your information into account, particularly because we are somewhat rushing it. But let me throw that out, and unless you're going to bring up another suggestion, then let's bat that idea around, please. Randy?
Can we at least send a message very clearly to the commission that this is something we feel is important for us to weigh in on before they make a decision? That's especially when it comes to reducing lifeline funds, that's one of our standing committees that they appointed us to. And for us to not clear that through that standing committee, it kind of begs the question, well, why do we have it if we're not clearing those questions? So I have no problem deferring this until next month when we can actually meet at a regular time. But at the same time, I want the commissioners to know in mass that we want to weigh in on this.
And I think we can absolutely do that, Linda.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've put it off several times now, and we have a good enough reason to ask them to put it off again until we've had a chance to do it. I don't think that's unfair.
And I think we can articulate that message to them. I'm not quite sure who will make that committee meeting, but usually Aegon or I attend the committee meetings. We give a report as to the information and issues that we've discussed at here at our meetings. And so even if it's on their agenda that morning, they'll hear that message from us prior to. And let me be fully clear on this. I think I would like to turn this issue over to the Equity and Access Committee first, because to me it's an access issue, and let them discuss it and then bring that information to our committee. Okay? All right, seeing enough nods, that is the message we will include as part of our report to the commission in 2 weeks. And we will take a look at the agendas and then see how to best fold this in. Okay, thank you. Let us go then to item 3, the approval of the minutes from June 13th.
Move approval.
Second.
Read them, they look good.
It's been moved and seconded. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Noes? Abstentions? That motion carries unanimously. All right, we're on to item number 6, our TIP investment analysis, and this is the focus on our low-income and minority populations. And Sri, I think this is for you, right? Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Shisha Navasan. I'm with the Programming and Allocation section. I hope you can all hear me. Is it better now?
Yes.
Okay. Before I get started, just to give you a heads up, we have been working very hard to put this the draft 2013 TIP together. This is what the draft 2013 TIP looks like. There are two parts to it, and the commission approved the public review period for the draft 2013 TIP and accompanying transportation air quality conformity analysis as of June 22nd. The public review period and comment period goes on up till August 2nd. So if you have any comments, please do send them and we'll try and address them. The draft 2013 TIP is expected to be approved by the Commission in September. And in order to make this a little more accessible, we did put together a guide to the TIP. And it was in your packets as part of as attachment one. And in case you want a prettier copy of it, there is one handout on the side table. This is what it looks like. And in addition to trying to make the actual TIP more accessible, we tried to put together the draft investment analysis to allow you to see the effects of the Transportation 2020. The projects, investments that are planned as part of the 2013 TIP, then see how they affect the minority and low-income populations. So as I said, the purpose of the 2013 TIP investment analysis is to assist in the public assessment of the 2013 TIP, especially given that it's this big. We're hoping that this will illustrate the equity implications of the proposed TIP investments, and especially evaluate the key questions: are low-income and minority populations sharing equitably in the TIP's financial investments? This definitely follows in the steps of the 2011 TIP investment analysis that we did 2 years ago. We are trying to be responsive to Title VI and environmental justice MPO planning requirements. We just wanted to put this context into this analysis in context, and we wanted to say this is one of the several different assessments that MTC does, one of them being the Plan Bay Area equity analysis that's ongoing. We did the 2011 TIP investment analysis in September 2010. We did the snapshot analysis in June 2010. And we did the Transportation 2030 equity analysis in February 2009. Just a few things about the TIP. It consists of approximately 900 surface transportation projects. The investments total about $11.2 billion over a four-year TIP period. And as you can see from the chart, local funds make up the largest share, which is about 51% of all of the funds. There are very specific differences between the 2013 TIP and Transportation 2035. The TIP only covers a four-year period versus Transportation 2035 that covered a 25-year period. As you can see from the comparison of the charts, you will find that the majority of investments in the TIP are going towards highway and maintenance operations and transit expansion, whereas in the plan, it's only 30% for highway roadway operations, 13% for transit expansion, and 53% of its transit operations that versus the 2018% in the TIP. Now, there are specific reasons for the differences between the 2013 TIP and the Transportation 2035. The 2013 TIP is roughly about 20% or 50% of the investments across the 2035, the plan period, over the same four-year period. So the 2013 TIP generally only includes projects that are regionally significant, have federal funds, or require federal action. So it doesn't necessarily have your locally funded, small projects and maintenance projects. Transportation 2035 is all planned transportation projects. On the other hand, the TIP is only the investments in the 4 years. Transit and roadway operations maintenance is very underrepresented in the 2013 TIP, because these investments are predominantly 100% locally funded. Just to put the context of this analysis in the terms of the Bay Area itself, 25% of Bay Area households make less than $50,000. Whereas, and as you all know, we are a majority-minority area with 54% of our population making up various racial and ethnic minorities. And in the context of the actual trip-making behavior, majority of the trips are made by motor vehicle motor vehicles almost 80%. And the travel patterns, the same travel pattern holds for the low-income and minority populations, but the transit and non-motorized share increases for low-income and minority populations. We've used two analytical methodologies for this analysis, and once again, I have to say that we're only using the 4 years of the TIP, which is FY 13, 14, 15, and 16. And the two analytical methodologies are the population use base analysis and the methodology we used in the 2011 TIP. We applied the same thing here. And then we did an access-based analysis. It was very similar to the 2011 TIP, but we used an updated communities of concern definition. And this definition is what we worked with you on for using in Plan Bay Area. In addition to the two analytical methodologies, what we've tried to do this time is we've tried to map all of the mappable projects to show you where the projects are and show you the relative geographies. So we've tried to map it against communities of concern and for each and every ethnic minority against tracts with greater than regional average. So if the regional average was 5%, any tract that had 6% or, say, Hispanic population, we showed. All of the details by ethnicities we ended up putting on the website because it was a sheer number of maps. But in your packet, you'll find the minority map as well as the communities of concern map for every single county. Now, for the population and use base analysis, it's use-based. We took the 2013 investments, and then we separated it into two modes, transit and road and highway mode. We then compared the investment, percentage of investment for low-income and minority population to the percentage of use. And it'll become clear in just a second. We've got some examples to show you. We used the Bay Area Travel Survey from 2000, and then we used the Transit Passenger Demographic Survey from 2006 and the 2013 TIP investments. Once again, we have not changed the methodology from the 2011 TIP investment analysis. And just to give you a better example and better idea of what we were trying to do, an example is if we took the SR4 East Widening Project in Contra Costa County that has $20 million in the 4 years of the TIP, and then we looked at what BAT said, or the Bay Area Travel Survey. And according to the Bay Area Travel Survey, 13% of the vehicle miles traveled was by low-income residents. So then we assigned 13% of the $20 million that for SR4 East Widening to low-income residents, as going towards low-income residents. So we accounted for $2.6 million. We did this for every single project, so kind of added it up in the end. Similarly, Contra Costa County's the vehicle miles traveled by minority residents was 35%, so we've assigned 35% of the $20 million, which is $7 million, as going towards minority populations. Transit project, we took the BART rail car replacement project, which is $668 million in the 4 years of the TIP. And according to data we had from the Transit Passenger Demographic Survey, it's at 43% of BART riders are low-income riders. So we assigned 43% of the $668 million, which is $287 million, to low-income riders. 55% were ethnic minorities, so we assigned 55% of the $668 million to ethnic minority residents across the Bay Area, to totaling $367 million. For a different project, again, we did the same thing. Golden Gate, $19 million, and 32% were low-income riders, so we assigned 32% of $19 million to low-income riders, and 26.7%, or approximately 27, were minority riders, so we kind of attributed $5 million of the $19 million to ethnic minorities. So for the access base, the second analytical methodology we use, this is obviously location and access base. It does not take into account system use. We compare this percentage of investment in communities of concern to the percentage of investment or infrastructure located in those communities. So we use the same 2013 TIP investments and American Community Survey data from 2005 and 2009. We did want to point out that the COC definition has been updated since the 2011 TIP investment analysis, and it's consistent with the Plan Bay Area, the effort that we worked with you on. Now, for the access-based analysis, we took the 2013 TIP investments and then we classified them into two groups, as local mapped projects and network or system projects. And for local mapped projects, we kind of compared the physical locations of the COCs and then the funding for the projects that are located within a COC boundary or partially in a COC boundary had their funding amounts assigned to the COCs in the same ratio as the length or the area of the overlap. So what you see in orange versus the red, so we took the orange percentage and assigned it to the community of concern. For those that did not intersect the community of concern, we assigned it to not going towards communities of concern. For network and system-based projects, we subdivided it into state highways, local roads, and transit, and then had assigned a share of the funding to communities, inside communities of concern or outside communities of concern, using very similar methodology from the previous time, but we took GIS. So we said for state highway projects, if a percentage of, based on the percentage of the lane miles in each county, be in inside or outside COCs, we assigned the same thing, assigned the investments in the same percentage. Similarly, for local streets and roads and for transit projects. For transit projects, we used either the number of stations for rail or terminals for rail and ferry projects, we used, and for bus projects, we used the percentage of route miles inside and outside communities of concern. And just to make it a little more easy, for access-based projects, a sample project, as you can see, I don't know if you can see it very clearly, but there's a little project in East Palo Alto that has about $11 million across the 4 years of the TIP. It's mapped and in a community of concern, and so we attributed the entire $11 million as going towards a community of concern. For access-based or transit project, we took the same $668 million BART rail car replacement project, and the number, there are 37% of the stations or BART stations are in communities of concern. So we assigned 37% of the investments to as being going towards communities of concern. So as again, the key question posed in this analysis was, are low-income and minority populations sharing equitably in the TIP's financial investments? And several results suggest that the 2013 TIP invests greater share of funding to the benefit of low-income and minority communities compared to their proportionate share of the region's population or travel as a whole. So just to, both methodologies showed that a higher proportional investment in the 2013 TIP was made rather than a proportionate share taken by their minority and low-income populations or communities of concern populations. So 24% of our 2013 TIP investments went towards 16% of the total trips. 49% of the TIP investments went towards 42% of the trips. 22% of the TIP investments went to 20%, that is in 20% of the population in communities of concern. We tried to break it down further. For population use base analysis, 24% of the investment shares going towards 16% of the trips for low-income people. For 49% of the investments are going towards 42% of racial and ethnic minorities. 10% of the investments are going towards Black or African American populations that make up 6% of the total trips. 18% of the investments goes towards 16% of Asian, of the trips made by Asian Pacific Islanders. 15% of the investments goes towards 14% of the trips made by Hispanic and Latino populations, and 6% for multiple races. We tried to compare the investments to the percentage of vehicle miles traveled also, and we found that our 13% of the investments are going towards 13% of vehicle miles traveled by low-income people. 40% of the investments seem to be going towards 40% of the vehicle miles traveled by racial and ethnic minorities. 5% of the investments seem to go towards 5% of vehicle miles traveled by African, Black and African American community. 17% of the investments are going towards 16% of vehicle miles traveled by the Asian and Pacific Islander community. 13% of the investments are going towards 14% of the vehicle miles traveled by the Hispanic and Latino races. We tried to break it down by just looking at the transit investments to transit trips, and 59% of the investment seems to be going towards 56% of the trips made by low-income people. 61% of the investments are going towards 60% by racial and ethnic minorities. 13% of the investment seems to be going towards 18% of the trips, transit trips made by African, American, and Black communities. 18% of the investment seems to be going towards 14% of the Asian of the transit trips made by the Asian community. 26% of the investment seems to be going towards 23% of the transit trips made by the Hispanic and Latino communities. For the access-based, we can kind of compare the total investments against the population share. And the first result was that 22% of the investments went towards 20% of the population that are in communities of concern. We then compared the investments to just the share of lane miles. So we found that 8% of the lane miles are in communities of concern, whereas 23% of the investments were made in communities of concern. 20% of the investment share, again, went to communities of concern, whereas the share of route miles or number of stations in for transit investments were 18%. So the next steps for the 2013 TIP are, as I said, the public comment period started June 22nd. It goes through August 2nd, so if you have any comments, please send them in. The 2013 TIP is scheduled for adoption by the Commission at the September 26th meeting. That ends my presentation, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Sri. I'm going to ask you a question, if I may, on page 11, since that's just our first example that you gave.
Uh-huh.
As we talk about the State Route 4 widening project being a cost of $20 million, and you've attributed the 13% VMT and 35% VMT, respectively, for low-income and minority residents, Is there any overlap in that $2.6 and $7 million, or are you saying that out of the $20 million spent on this project, roughly 9.6 of it is going to be spent on advances for the low-income and minority population?
No, it's overlapping.
So there is some overlap.
Yes. So we didn't look at it in terms of how much is going towards low-income and minorities. So we kind of looked at it as how much is going towards low-income population and how much is going to minority residents. So we took that as two separate questions and rather didn't think of it, you know, as going towards low-income.
So then is it fair to say, at the very least, $7 million will be spent on low-income and minority populations, which would also then make me assume that at the very most, $9.6 million will be spent on benefits to those two populations?
Yes. I would characterize it as, at the very least, $7 million is going to low-income and minority residents. Right. I would, exactly as you characterized it, 7 and 9.6 as being the outer limit.
Okay, and so then following that logic on page 12, at least 287 is going to be spent between the two populations and at most 367.
No, it'll be the addition of 287 and 367 for the at most and 367 at least. So at least...
Okay, let me come back then to the smaller numbers for a second.
Okay.
You're saying at least 7.
Yes.
Let's go back to page 11.
Correct.
But at most 9.6.
Correct.
Okay. So at least...
367.
Okay. And then at most then 654.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on this? Okay. Thank you. And did the did your committee see this also, the equity and access, or is this your first look?
Yes, we saw it in May.
Okay.
Sorry. This came first to the Equity Access Committee in May, and Sri explained the two different methodologies to us and took comments from us on it, and the committee was in concurrence.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Sri. Totally appreciate it. And if anybody has any further comments or know of organizations that want to comment, they have until August 2nd during that public comment period. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, our next item on the agenda is something that we've talked about a little bit before, which is the express, the regional express lane network system. And Lisa, I think you're going to bring us up to speed here, so to speak. But don't charge us too much.
This meeting is free.
Thank you.
Let's see. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Lisa Klein. I'm the Express Lanes Program Manager. As Dolly indicated, this item builds on the discussion that we had with you on your April 3rd special meeting on the Regional Express Lane Network. We have three purposes here today. One, I want to provide you a brief update on the work that we've been doing. Two, I have provided in your memo responses to a number of questions that arose at that meeting on April 3rd, and three, where I really would like to focus the discussion today and where we would like some input from you is on our proposed approach to environmental justice analysis that we'll be doing for the project. In terms of the update on work to date, what's probably of the most interest to this committee is the fact that we've slowed down a little bit on the discussion of the entity that's going to set the policy for the Express Lanes Network. Back in April, we had expected to ask the commission to deliberate on this in May and June. That didn't happen. This is not one of the items that you guys fell behind on. What happened was, in part, I think in response to some of the dialogue at this committee, we really just decided to slow that down. So the plan now, the likely plan, is to reassess and potentially come back to that in the fall. Second topic today in terms of responses to the questions from your meeting at April 3rd, there, as I mentioned, we did include in the agenda packet in attachment 2 a response to each of those questions that we recorded. If it pleases the chair and the committee, I'd prefer not to spend time going through those right now. If there are questions at the end of the presentation, I would certainly be happy to address them at that time, or if you seek further explanation. So now I want to kind of turn to the main event today for us. That's the approach to the environmental justice analysis. I'm joined today by Phyllis Potter of Parsons Brinckerhoff. Parsons Brinckerhoff is the consultant team that is leading the work on this, on a portion, of our environmental justice analysis. And Phyllis will say a little bit more about that in a moment. I'm just going to set the stage a little bit before I turn it over to her. So what we're hoping to get from you today is some important feedback. Phyllis is going to describe a proposed approach. It's not in French. I don't know where that came from. And we wanted to hear from the committee, does the framework that she's going to describe it address the main environmental justice questions? The second thing we want to ask today is that we are proposing to do some surveying of low-income and minority residents as part of this effort, and we're interested in the suggestions this committee may have about how we go about that. So, you'll recall, I hope, from the April 3rd meeting that the focus of all of MTC's work on express lanes is the portion of the regional network that MTC has the ability to implement and operate. And on this map, it's the area circled in blue and shown by the green lines without any highlighting on them. In all, this is about 270 miles of freeway and counting both directions, and the lanes fall into three counties. That's Solano County, Alameda County, and Contra Costa County. And it's really predominantly on three, it's really on three travel corridors, I-80, I-880, and I-680, again in Contra Costa and Solano County. The trigger for the environmental justice analysis that we're undertaking, however, is this phase one project. And when we met last in April, I explained that MTC is undertaking environmental studies for the phase one project. It's a subset of the larger network that MTC will implement and operate. It is in total about 80 miles. They're all conversions of existing carpool lanes. And these are on most of Interstate 880, a portion of 680 in Contra Costa, and then the approaches to the San Mateo, Dumbarton, and Bay Bridge. I do want to point out, because you just heard a report on the TIP analysis, which obviously has some similarities in that it's addressing low-income and minority populations, but actually really quite different from what we're trying to do here. The focus of Sri's presentation was, and of the analysis in the TIP, is the distribution of investments, right? And what we're really talking about for the Express Lane project is not really where the money is going, but really how our communities and residents are going to be impacted by the project, both positively and negatively. So I want to make sure to draw that distinction before we launch in here. And with that, I'd like to turn over to Phyllis.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Lisa. In looking at the approach for the environmental justice analysis, we've been working with the Phase 1 project team as well as MTC in developing a two-part approach. The context analysis is what Parsons Brinckerhoff is going to be taking the lead on, while the project analysis will be done by the environmental consulting team. And the context analysis is looking at a larger area and addressing certain questions that are important to the environmental justice communities, the low-income and minority communities, at more of a program level. It will look at a slightly larger area, and it will look at sort of a broader context of issues. The project analysis will provide more specific evaluation of phase one impacts, more specific in that they will look at air quality and noise, as well as in that context, it's very important to consider whether there are disproportionate impacts to low-income and minority populations. The context analysis has more to do with what are the existing conditions and patterns and issues associated with the express lanes to low-income and minority communities. We identified four key questions in working in our background work that I'm going to go through with you, because the approaches that we've come up with specifically address these questions. The first two here are, where do low-income and minority populations reside and travel within the area covered by the MTC-authorized express lane network? And what are the user characteristics of these travelers by mode, and to what extent are improvements in overall mobility in the MTC-authorized express lane network likely to serve these travelers? So related to these two key questions, overall approach that we're working towards is to first establish a consistent criteria to identify minority and low-income communities relative to the MTC-authorized express lane network. It's worth noting that the area that we anticipate to be focusing on are the three counties that are adjacent or within the express lane network: Solano, Alameda, Contra Costa County. And in the fact that we're narrowing the focus, we want to make sure that the criteria that we use for those three counties is consistent with the criteria, or vice versa, the criteria that was used for the nine county areas is applicable to the three counties. So right now we're evaluating that at this time to come up with the appropriate criteria for these three counties. and then we will map and locate the appropriate, the low-income and minority communities. Then we're intending to identify the travel patterns by income and mode in the areas that generate the most trips in the corridors within the network. We have already undertaken what's called a travel shed analysis, and what that shows is the origin of the trips towards the corridors that Lisa mentioned, I-80, 880, and 680. And based on that travel shed analysis, we have determined that it is really the three counties that generate the predominant trips towards the express lane networks. So we want to look at, be able to identify the patterns of use and mode within these counties. The second series of questions relate to the toll tag requirement and the willingness of the low-income and minority populations to participate, to purchase toll tags, to do they feel that it's a barrier to that? And so the first key question is the toll tag requirement a barrier for low-income and minority persons who may be more likely to lack access to a credit card or bank account? And it's really more the replenishing of the account. There are lots of avenues for people to purchase with cash toll tags, but there are not places currently where they can replenish these cards. So it's really more of an issue of replenishment than actual purchase. And then the second question is really, are low-income populations likely to be able to afford and willing to pay the tolls? And this is where the surveys are being introduced, because that's an area where we really need to talk to the people that will be affected and to identify what their concerns are. So the approaches that we've
Not sure I heard you correctly. Can I ask, can you restate your comment that low-income communities do not experience a problem with access to credit cards for purposes of acquisition?
Oh,
rather,
I'm sorry. That's not what I said.
Well, would you restate it,
yes,
please?
Yes, I'd be happy to. The comment that I made was that toll tags can be purchased at Walgreens, Costco, and other stores in the Bay Area with just the purchasing of them with cash. That is currently available at many, many, many facilities throughout the Bay Area. The thing that is not available is when they run out, when they've used up the toll tag amount, they cannot go back to those same places and replenish the amount on the card. There's only one place that they can go to do that, and that's one place in the whole Bay Area. So that's where the barrier lies, and I just wanted to clarify that.
Let me just add, we're at the very early stages of this analysis, so I would say it's probably not fair to say we've drawn conclusions about this yet.
Right.
What Phyllis is mentioning here is based sort of on our preliminary investigations. What we think will be very important in this process is the surveys, when we talk to folks and really understand firsthand, do low-income and minority individuals feel that they can access and are they aware
right.
of them?
Absolutely.
Lisa, this is Steve Heminger, Executive Director. I wonder if I could add 2 points. The first is, I believe we have instituted the ability for people to replenish at toll plazas. So it's not just at the customer service center with cash. We have virtually no one doing it today, and we have 1 million fast track accounts. And I don't think it's likely that 1 million accounts are all high-income people. So I think we also need to be guided by the experience we've had. There is a very significant degree of market penetration for Fast Track today among a lot of income levels, and I think we need to study that as well as the other places around the country where these lanes are in operation and are used by people of all income levels.
Yes, we are just at the very beginning of this. Some of the approaches that we have identified to address the two questions that I just introduced are to review user cost procedures and access options for obtaining and maintaining a fast track toll tag, to survey low income and minority residents in the MTC authorized express lane network to understand their travel patterns and any issues or concerns that they have associated with the project, and then to review studies and tolling and toll tag use by low income and minority travelers in other regions and access applicability to the Bay Area. And that addresses just what was previously identified. We will be looking at other projects and other areas and what the results of those projects has been, what the characteristics are. As Lisa mentioned, we are going to undertake surveys. We have identified some potential engagement tools, and we're certainly looking for suggestions or responses to these. These include intercept surveys, focus groups, website, direct mail to a focused population, flyers, and newsletters. So those are things that we have introduced as possibilities at this point in time. We've also identified some potential survey questions that could be asked of low-income minority populations, which are: do you own your own vehicle? Do you carpool with another person in his or her vehicle? How many days per week do you travel on whatever the specific highway might be during the AM peak period? How many days per week do you travel during the PM peak period? Are you willing to pay a fee on occasions when it is important to you to avoid congestion when traveling on a particular highway? If you were to pay a fee to avoid congestion, what would be the easiest way for you to pay the fee? So this is just sort of an example of how we're thinking, and this is not intended to be the final product in any way. We were looking for feedback. As we mentioned, the project level analysis will provide additional detail regarding certain specific environmental impacts associated particularly with air quality, noise, traffic impacts, and assessing whether there are disproportionate impacts to low-income or minority populations. The schedule for the context analysis, the one that we're working on, is to refine our methodology through July, to have a draft report in October, and a final report in December of 2012.
And I would just close by adding what that means for this group is that we would like to come back to you September, probably more likely October, as we start to have that draft report ready and be able to share with you some of the findings. And that, I guess, Carlos, did I see that Dolly handed over to you for the time being? So that concludes the staff presentation, and we're certainly happy to answer any questions.
Okay, yeah, I've been handed the gavel, and so, and here comes Dolly, but I'll take the first question from Lori.
I have a few questions. Okay, so under discussion question number two, you say, what suggestions does the Policy Advisory Council have for surveying low-income and minority residents who may be impacted? And so I think on the survey, there should be some information about the cost. And what's the, because I don't think that the cost would really work for a lot of I don't think it currently works for a lot of minority individuals, because their pay may not be so accommodating for, if they have to cross the bridge every day to get to and from work, or maybe they have to go across two bridges to get to and from work. So there should be some some sections there in terms of what fee would you like to pay? What fee did you think is most applicable with the income that you're currently making? Let's say $1 to $2, $2 to $3, $3 to $4, $4 to $5, something like that. Of course, they're going to pick one. I would. But I think that should be an option for them. And then you have the, under key questions, is the toll tag on page 8, is the toll tag requirement a barrier to for low-income and minority persons who may be more likely to lack access to a credit card or bank account? Well, my answer to that, and I think I can speak for most of them, would be yes. I think it is. And so I think that we should probably phrase that question a different way so that they can kind of get an idea of what, you know, that they have the choice of paying in cash, maybe at a local convenience store, maybe at Walmart or some of the shopping centers that they have access to and that they are usually accustomed to going to. And then the second question on here is, are low income, on page 8, are low income populations likely to be able to afford and willing to pay the tolls? I can answer that one too. No. Okay, so maybe you should rephrase that in a way that sounds more, would this be one of the survey questions? Or this is just a question that you're asking?
That's one of the purposes of the survey is to get some feedback.
Okay.
Well, so let me just clarify for a second. I mean, there are certain questions we're asking as part of our analysis. And these are questions, these key, four key questions are questions we want our analysis to answer. Mm-hmm. Part of, as we do the survey will be one of the means that we collect data to inform our analysis, not the only means. So there's not 100% overlap. This isn't language we're suggesting for the survey, mm-hmm. but this is what we want to understand through our analysis.
Okay, and also through that analysis, you have to also realize under your potential engagement tools on page 10 that a lot of minority communities may not have access to computers in their home. So it's going to be very unlikely that they're going to be able to get this survey via website. Direct mail, most minority populations discard of their direct mail, especially for something like this. They don't really answer or focus on answering survey questions through direct mail. Flyers and newsletters, they're going to ignore that too. So I think that you're going to have another approach to attract them. Maybe you're going to almost need to have some people to canvass the area, almost like the census persons do, or you're going to have some staging at some of your local retail stores where people actually do surveys there to attract their attention, grab them, and then say, hey, can you answer these few questions for me? Because I can't see them actually answering, responding on a website or answering by direct mail, flyers and newsletters. And then the intercept surveys, what are those exactly? What is that?
That's kind of what you were describing.
I see, okay.
Being out canvassing, being at a particular location. And
yeah, I can see that working more than any of these other things because you're not going to get a very good response under these other categories, I don't think. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. Rich Hedges?
Yeah, I think, first of all, when asking the questions, we need to ascertain whether they currently use. So it'll be how many people do you ride with in the automobile? Because I think we're probably more than likely, I don't know the decisions made, move a lot of the that are currently two in a car to three when we go to this. So we need to ascertain whether they're going to be displaced currently when they're riding for free. And I think the other thing, instead of asking the question about in a positive way, it should be asked in a negative way, not a negative question, but a phrase negatively, like at what cost would you be moved from using when you need to get in a hurry? At what cost would it be? 3 cents a mile? Would it be 5 cents a mile? And a range of choices that would be too expensive, getting to a point where they could circle one that would be too expensive. That'll give you a key as to whether, you know, and maybe it's I can't use it at all. That might be one of the I can't afford it. But to get some idea of price point for folks too.
Carlos?
Just a few different questions. First of all, on to answer your second discussion question about suggestions on surveying, I would I would include in that list that you had also phone surveys and incentivizing people too, like if they participate, if there's a way that they could get a prize or something like that. I mean, I don't know if you can pay everybody just to do it, but at least, you know, give them an incentive. The focus group would work that way as well. If people knew that if they attended the focus group, they might be incentivized. I guess maybe to answer your first question about, I believe, particularly for the framework of the main environmental justice question, I do believe that the discussion about the barrier maintaining the toll tag and replenishing it, it's anecdotal, but we've talked about it before, and I think that it's something that definitely focusing on that is a good use of this study. I was going to suggest there are other organizations out there that look at the banking world and the unbanked and, you know, the barriers to credit, to getting credit or to banking and traditional institutions rather than, you know, doing the paydays, loans, and things like that. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think it's like Community Reinvestment Corporation. Organizations like that, they probably have a wealth of information that it'd be good to tap into, because it gives you kind of a background, because you're hearing anecdotally from us, and, you know, what I could tell you, yeah, there's a lot of people who are unbanked who are doing check cashing, and they're not going to be, they may or may not, they're day by day, you know, and so that was one of the concerns, is how do you get a low-income population to maintain a balance in there. So it would be good to check in with that source. And I think that's actually the main comments I was going to make. If I think of something else, I'll ask it again. Thanks.
I have Federico and then Randy. Then Frank.
Let me first say that I'm not particularly persuaded as to the value of this whole tolling process, and because I believe strongly that it has a negative impact on both commuters and particularly minority communities. But having said that, let me offer some suggestions as to how the process that you're envisioning might be made a little easier and a little more fruitful. I share the view that there will not be many respondents to these surveys, to these focus groups in particularly minority low-income communities. I'm not sure you're going to get a good, strong focus group out in Far East Oakland or out on Monument Boulevard or in Richmond. I'm not even sure who you're going to send out there to do that, but and when. I do think that if you want to elicit information, the better way is park some people over at the community health centers, La Clinica, at churches, talk with the pastors. The pastors are a great source, an invaluable source of information and entree to obtaining the type of information that you're seeking. Home Depot, types of places, I think you'll do far better eliciting information working through such venues. Secondly, I'd like to suggest that in terms of access for recharging, if you will, the toll tags, if that does in fact occur, let's not reinvent the wheel. There are already existing places that one can obtain tickets at. It always fails me to understand why we aren't working in coordination with ticket operations like BART, ticket operations like AC, ticket operations like County Connection, places that people are going to, particularly low-income people. And low-income people don't just use one mode of transportation. They bounce back and forth depending upon what their resources so provide. I would like to see some effort made to coordinate with entities such as the BART ticket operation, such as the County Connection or AC Transit ticketing operation, as well as with institutions and communities like many of the locally owned markets in different neighborhoods that provide a variety of services besides food stuffs, but in terms of cashing checks and doing other services for their clientele, particularly non-English speaking clientele. I'd encourage you to look into that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Randy?
Thank you. Job training work sites, any clinic, any place that's already serving low-income populations. These are prime sources for you to be able to do surveys. In Santa Clara County, I am going to not just request but insist that you reach out to the Vietnamese community, because I noticed in the last presentation that Vietnamese was not a language that was in the document, and it may not be statistically a huge number, but when you look at the number of low-income minority families in our county, we need to take that language into consideration. I'm also a little, besides supporting all the other comments that have been made about the accessibility of low-income people actually being able to use this system, I'm wondering where the environmental justice questions concerning what this started off as, where they disappeared to, because originally, and Carlos was on that committee with us, we were told that these HOV, these toll lanes, and the toll system would help support the environmental justice issue back end would be supporting higher levels of transit and kind of augmenting that on a local level, so that if a toll lane went through east side of San Jose, that we would see revenue. And I get that we're not going to see revenue, but at the same time, that was how that was sold to us in the beginning. So those questions don't seem to pop up here at all. So while we're concentrating on the toll system, we've lost track of the part that was that was the carrot for us before, and that carrot's disappeared. So I really would like some feedback on how we see that coming back into the equation.
Frank, and then Will.
Some of the suggestions I will have for serving people of low income should include community colleges, churches, and there are census tracts that identify concentration of low income folks. And this will give solid information, first-hand information, objective information. And also, the question was asked, it was presumed that low-income folks will use toll roads because some of them have fast tracks and all those things. That may be true. Low-income folks are buying homes, and they are using 80-85% of their income to pay for housing. They can afford it, but they have to. They will use some of these roads to get to work. Other than that, they will get fired. They will lose their jobs. So these things should be taken into account. It should be made affordable to them, because we haven't had a full environmental impact and equity analysis on this. Right now, it appears there will be no profit out of this project. If anything, there will be a loss. There will be a loss. And prime individuals, group of individuals who are going to benefit from this are rich folks. This will be pocket change for them. But even if $2-3 from a poor folk is a very serious hit for that individual, And we were told some of the rich areas, communities will be excluded from this toll road. They will be able to sleep fairly good without having to worry about these speeding cars and other other unacceptable noises and congestions. So this is not very good. It does not benefit poor folks, and it should be considered seriously, before it is actually implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Will?
Yeah, I had hoped, you know, we've learned a lot of things, like, if, for instance, Clipper Cart. San Francisco wanted to embark on it. And to reach out to the low-income community, it was devised that there are a lot of street fairs or cultural community fairs, and it's inexpensive entertainment for a lot of the families that come out. And they learned a lot of information about Clipper Card and how to get it. We even got to a point where it says, okay, you don't have to put down a deposit, just sign up for it. So it seems like we've done these before in certain projects, but yet we're not bringing that out. We're looking at reinventing the wheel. What shall we do? Shall we start from scratch, or shall we do it all over again? How do we reach them? Now, that's the same thing with the fast track. When it first came out, there was very low sign up. Then they started saying, okay, if you sign up now, we won't charge you the deposit. Well, that was the same thing with Clipper. That's why everybody didn't sign up in the beginning. Then they said, okay, if you sign up now, then we'll waive the deposit fee or the charge for the card. Now, a lot of that appeals to a lot of the families. But what I noticed, though, on the fast track, on weekends when they have to use the bridge, I have a fast track. There are a lot of cars that don't, and I ask myself, why don't they have one? Well, because if one car has it and somebody else is using the car to go to the city, they're not going to have multiple fast track cards in the multiple cars. Most low-income families, they're lucky they can afford one. And the idea is that they get charged when it reaches a certain point, and they'll debit their card. And that's taking money out of the food for the table for a lot of the families. And that's one of the reasons why they don't. That's why on weekends, the back up on the Bay Bridge is, you know, horrendous on Saturday. So, you know, those things, we would have the information, and you go across, you see it. But it seems like we're not analyzing that information. Why is everybody on Saturday not using a fast track on it? Thank you.
Any other questions from committee members? I have Linda.
I just had a suggestion in the questions. You know, one of the things we want is to encourage carpooling. Could we offer, say, tags that were designated for a certain number carpool, like 2N or 4N or whatever, that when you'd get a discount the more people you had in it? And that might make it affordable for some people. I know it's an administrative nightmare, but...
Lisa, go ahead.
Well, carpools are, by and large, are free. I shouldn't say carpools are free on this. Now, you have to be qualified as a carpool, right? So on Interstate 80, right now, today, to drive in the carpool lane, you need 3 people in the car to do it. So for a hot lane on Interstate 80, you would still need 3 people. So persons that are 3 would be free. We are looking at ways that that potentially at tags that you could tell if at any time you were 1, 2, or 3 people in the vehicle, and that would give you the ability to offer discounted tolls to 2-person carpools. So that was the long answer to the short answer, I guess, is yes.
Is that it? Okay. Lisa, I stepped out for the restroom, but can you remind me or tell me how many people or what percent of the population that we're looking at will be surveyed? What you or Phyllis are kind of like pulling at right now?
Well, I'll take a crack at that. So we really haven't gotten to that level of detail yet. We are not probably talking about a statistically significant telephone survey. We are more likely talking about, and it's fun, I mean, several of you made points that actually in the time since we put this presentation together and came here today, we've been talking and thinking about this, and many of the comments we heard today reinforce some of our thinking, and there were also a lot of very good new suggestions, so thank you. I think we are really intrigued by the idea of the intercept surveys. Many of the places that were mentioned here at churches, community centers, street fairs, all of these have come up. We have talked with some of the other programs, and we'll definitely be using those resources, using some of the same community groups probably to reach out into these communities. So I think the survey is going to be, and we will want to get a range in the survey of different income and racial and ethnic minorities, as well as some geographic balance. So in the end, we'll have to see exactly what we think it takes to get that. But this is not going to be a statistically significant telephone survey. It'd really be a, you know, understanding what level of effort we can take in the time that we, you know, in the next couple of months.
Okay. The other thing that I would suggest too is, particularly since I think we're about 6 weeks out, is school starts. Right. There's a lot of back to school. Every school has a back to school night, and so if you could target specific areas where there are high minority populations and work with those particular principals, that may be advantageous to your survey results at the same time, was an idea I had, as well as the multiple community service organizations that really do serve the low-income and very low-income population. One of the questions that I had is we're talking about this network and talking about hot lanes. I mean, part of the idea when I think transportation leaders of years past created HOV lanes was to help spread the traffic out so that not everybody was on the road between 6:30 and 7:30 in the morning. And those employees who could take advantage of coming into work a little bit later could come in later and at some point use the HOV lane, not during the designated time that it's in use. And so, again, I think I'm just going to raise the concern that if we take away that HOV lane and charge people to be in there, that to me, I think that's truly a detriment to the idea that we started with, which was to have traffic not all get on the road at once, kind of spread it out and take advantage of an extra lane during non-high commute hours. And unless there's another comment, I actually have a comment card from somebody on the floor. Lori, and then I'll go to the comment card.
Yeah, one last comment. And when you outreach to the communities...
Can you use your mic, Lori?
Oh, sorry. When you outreach to the communities, what is your approach to actually... I mean, so you're going to target churches? How do you gather the information, or how do you... You said you're going to go out and reach out to these community service organizations. How do you go about getting them or reaching them?
Well, that's what we're developing right now. We, as Lisa mentioned, we've talked a lot with MTC and have a fairly good idea about what's been done in the community organizations that have been used already for other surveys, let's say a 511 survey group and things like that. So we have we want to find the organizations that are within the areas that are going to be impacted. And that's we don't know who those are yet.
Right, I think maybe it would be a good suggestion that you take each one of the commissioners sitting here and let us give you information. I know I can for our community.
Okay.
And give you information of who those service organizations can be to really tap into the community residents.
Okay. Thank you for offering. That would be terrific.
Tina?
Maybe there could be a way that... I mean, how would we get that information to them?
So I think Lisa was nodding her head, and so we could just email it to Lisa. It's probably...
Let me say, I'm actually about to go on vacation, so could you please... Would it be okay for them to email it to you, and then Pam, I can make sure that you can connect with Phyllis to get it.
That's great, and we've actually given Pam a number of organizations for a number of different projects the last 2 years that I've been on this committee, and so she's got that list existing already to start with. But anything new that you can think of in this regard would be helpful and advantageous. No other questions from this body? Then let us hear from our public speaker. I believe it's Wafaya Abarashad from the Bay Area Healthy 880 community. And please correct me if I am. And I apologize if I am butchering your name.
I'm used to it, and I will tell you it's Wafa Abu Rashid. And this is the first time I'm coming to these meetings, and so it's really interesting that we're talking about this particular question, but I want to go back to the evaluation phase one in regards to the noise and air pollution impacts. I felt like I didn't quite understand what were you covering in terms of noise. Are we looking at fence line communities that are on the freeways that have these fast lane HOVs? And when do you look at doing a health assessment of noise and the air quality? You know, so it's one of those things that I feel like we always talk about it and it flies right out like it did today. So I want more attention to the noise and what that noise impact does to those fence line communities. The last thing I want to do, we're a CBO, community-based organization, and we're out of Davis Street Family Resource Center, so we have a lot of people that you can also do this with. So utilize those CBOs. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And then, Lisa, could you address her question?
Yeah, I'm actually going to ask Scott Steinward. He's also on our environmental team, and he'll be doing leading the work on the environmental analysis at the project level, which is really where the noise and air assessment comes in. And Scott is with Circle Point.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commission. Yes, to answer the question, yes, in fact, we are going to do a fence line community analysis of air and noise and impacts. So the way that will work for the environmental document on the phase one projects, that 80 miles of the initial set, that's the one we'll be doing the detailed environmental analysis of. We start with doing detailed traffic analyses and operations to look at how the traffic will change when we add the express option to the HOV lane. And then from that data, we do air quality analyses, noise analyses, looking at those communities immediately along those corridors and see how the air quality and noise will change. And if there are substantial changes in those air quality, air pollutant emissions, then that would give us indication whether more detailed things like health risk assessments would be needed. So that's the process. We're just, as we said, we're starting all this stuff, so we don't even have the traffic analyses. That's what we'll be embarking on the next several months.
Great. Okay, thank you. Thank you for updating us on this issue yet again, and completely appreciate it. And then your timeline, I had it a second ago. So you're talking right now about refining the methodology and developing the survey, et cetera. So am I reading this correctly there on page 13, that between now and October, you not only will devise the survey questions, but you'll administer, collect, and then have some preliminary information by the time October rolls around?
Yes. We may still be in the process of doing more, but we'll definitely have preliminary information by then.
Okay. Ambitious.
Yes, very ambitious.
In my estimation of this and many other governmental entities. But, okay, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Lisa and Phyllis, very much. And Scott. Our next item is Pam, the staff liaison report.
Well, I don't have much this month. I just want to remind you of a few things that you can actually read in your report. As Sri mentioned earlier, August 2nd is your deadline for TIP comments to her. And at this council's request, I just wanted to note that we did add an extra environmental impact review meeting in Solano County. You'll recall that you requested that, and that was added. So I did put that in the report, just so you know. That was held on Monday, June 25th. And there were people there, so... Typically, we do not hold meetings in August, so your next Policy Advisory Council meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, September 12th. And that's all I have.
Federico.
With the chair's permission, I'd like to offer a motion. But beforehand, I would like to make this comment. We have been in existence now, if my grain memory serves me, for about 2 years. Hopefully, we've had some positive success. I'd like to think so. But if that is the case, I believe a good part of that success should be attributed to the work done by the staff. Pam, Leela, and the others who work very hard and diligently to make sure that we have all our materials timely, organize the presenters. I think at times it's like the herding cats to get everybody together. And I think that we should give recognition to the hard work that the staff has done and constantly does. I'd like to also state that I never know, and this is positive, where Pam stands. She goes straight down the middle. I mean, she's not biased this way or that way. I think that's the perfect staff person. She has worked hard to ensure that there is non-biased in the material presented as she gives it to us, that this PAC council is filled with diversity of views, and that to me is very difficult to achieve, but that is something that that has been done. And on a personal note, I'd like to add that I am personally very grateful for the efforts made by Pam, particularly by Leela, to ensure that materials are electronically posted so that I can fully participate in viewing them. Otherwise, I'd be totally lost. And I do a lot of presentations, a lot of participation at transit-related activities. This is the only place I come to, the only place where all the materials, supporting materials, are there, as opposed to somebody rushing up and saying, Mr. Lopez, here's something for you to take a look at the last moment. I am very much appreciative of that. And with that in mind, I would like to make a motion that the PAC formally commend in a communication by the chair. I commend Pam, Leela, and the staff for the work they do. Send that commendation to the MTC board and the executive on our behalf, crafting it in a style and manner fitting of the expression of our appreciation for Pam and the staff.
All right, and it's overwhelmingly seconded by every other person on this committee, I'm sure. All those in favor say aye. Yay. And I'm not even going to ask about the rest. Okay. Federico, thank you for sharing your sentiment today. At the last MTC commission meeting that I had to report on a couple weeks ago, the MTC chair there was speaking very highly of the staff, the frontline staff that they work most with, and that Steve and Ann and Andy. And I, the first thing I led with my comments were very much the same kind of comments you led with today. And really, Pam, I think that you need to know that while we have a very wide view of opinions on a very wide view of topics, the professionalism and the enthusiasm and the ability to get back to us in a very timely manner held by Leslie before and Lila and you is truly an asset to this organization. And Steve, we hope to deliver that message again in 2 weeks, now more formally, but we recognize that you have a good staff here, and we appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. Okay, with that, are there any other council member reports? Okay, we have Linda and then Richard.
Okay, Linda can start.
Yes.
I have a question on just how far Clipper has spread around the Bay Area community. As an example, I rode the bus rapid transit out in the valley, and I thought, now here's a perfect place you could use your clipper, and they don't have it yet. So I'm wondering if we could find out when Lofta is supposed to get clipper, and whoever else doesn't have it.
Figure that out.
Thank you.
Richard.
Marshall may want to weigh in on this. I just wanted to make you aware of a little gem in transit here in the Bay Area. We read the paper that the 76 bus in San Francisco runs only on Sunday. It is accessible by any of the regional transit. I'll explain how. The bus goes, it begins at Caltrain at 4th and Townsend. You can pick it up from BART at Post and Montgomery. And it runs from 4th and Townsend to Fort Concrete at the Headlands. Marshall and I and our wives took a Caltrain on Sunday. The schedule's not that great for Caltrain. We had a 40-minute wait, but if you plan ahead, it's enough time to have a nice lunch around, and there are many places around Caltrain. And we went to the Headlands. They have a wonderful visitor center with descriptions of everything from history to the wildflowers. And I might add that the wild roses and all the wildflowers are out. We were able to hike around, watch the surfers. I don't engage in anything that's strenuous anymore. And quite frankly, for Caltrain, a round trip for my wife and I, because you can, unlike Samtrans, you can transfer without paying another fee in San Francisco, the total round trip cost was $12 for both of us. And the bridge alone is $6. So I would suggest for an adventure and for your friends that aren't that that well-versed in public transit, this might be a good start.
Matt. Any other commissioner reports?
I have one quick report.
Okay.
So the U.S. Senate Banking Committee and the Congress Committee recently adopted their transportation bill, and in that transportation bill, it includes language that we have been trying to get in there for a long time on the Cybertrans Ultralight Rail project for the city of Richmond, even though I'm representing Solano County, but this would also help Solano County. And the Cybertrans Ultralight Rail are these individual 20-passenger vehicles that will be tested at the UC Berkeley Field Station. They currently have their operation station there now, and so they're going to have a test track. So this language would allow funding to support a demonstration and a test track at the UC Berkeley Field Station, and ultimately within 3 to 5 years start building out a project somewhere in Richmond that would also reach Solano County.
Yay!
Could you send me any?
That's very good.
Is this a cable?
All right. Any new business to come besides what Linda raised and... besides what Linda raised. Yeah, Rich?
Sorry.
Thank you. Any other new business? All right. Well, then I will adjourn this meeting, and I will see you all in September. Thank you very much.
If anyone needs an expense form, I have it.